In loving memory of my dear agent, mentor, and friend, Clemens Kempkes, this episode is dedicated to you.
Hello there.
Welcome
to The Yummy Factor,
the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the mesmerizing world of filming food commercials. I'm Xander, food and tabletop director, and I'll be sitting down with the true masters of the craft, including directors, food stylists, practical special effects wizards, and anyone involved in this crazy world to hopefully shed some light on what it takes to make food look absolutely mesmerizing on screen. Today, I'm talking with Ola van Gerwen, director, DP, founder of Chuck Studios, an absolute tabletop heavyweight, who's recently been pushing forward the importance of creating culinary identities. Check out more about Olaf and Chuck Studios in the description below.
Let's go.
Let's go. Welcome, Olaf, to the show.
Thank you very much.
I'm super, super happy to have you here. You are a little bit like a mentor to me. I got into this whole tabletop thing and we shared the same agent, Clemens, who unfortunately passed away recently. So we're very sad about that. Yeah, you didn't.
I didn't know that.
Oh, shit. You didn't?
Fuck me. I didn't know that.
No. That was
a... I haven't been in touch with him in a while, but he passed?
Yeah.
Fuck me, I didn't know that. Well, my condolences to you too, my buddy. I didn't know that.
Yeah, like, that's
the shit. Talk
after the recording, I'll tell you all about it. But,
yeah. Fuck me, I didn't know this.
When I decided to go into tabletop, Clemens told me that, yeah, like, I have this, you know, amazing tabletop director. And obviously what I did for weeks is analyzing your work. You know, I was just like blown away. I was like, oh, when I grow up, I want to be like Olaf. You know, I remember that the first time we talked, you know, I had all these questions. What lenses did you use? What this and that. So yeah, in a way, it's super exciting for me to talk to you because, you know, you've been doing this for forever. I feel you and Chuck Studios are one of the hottest places to do food. I got the chance to work with Chuck one time and yeah, it was super nice.
Well, thanks, man. Those are really kind words. Thank you.
Yeah. And I reached out to you to, you know, talk a little bit, and I'm going to start the thing with what we probably hear more than anything else is, can we do it like Lurpak?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. No, that's true. Recently a new one came out. It's again a stunner. I love it. It's the most sensational finding about that campaign is not only that the visuals are stunning and it looks sensational, but if you look a little bit deeper into it, the most surprising thing about it is that this is a brand that's been following pretty much the same strategy for about 15 years. They made a choice to make cooking this big life adventure.
Alien.
And every time they find a new angle to display cooking as an adventure in which you make a sensational meal out of ordinary ingredients and the cook is on a journey. That's a bit the, in a nutshell, the strategy behind it. So I think the most stunning thing is not the execution. It is stunning and is very eye-catching and sensational, but it's the strategy and the long-term thinking of the brand people of Arla. That's the most sensational bit about it. The fact that the images are so spectacular make marketers think, I want that too. But the real consideration could be, or should be, does it fit my brand? Does it tell anything about what my brand is or what the purpose of my brand on this earth is? So people are looking at shiny things for effect, for impact.
Yeah.
And are lured in to that world. We get a lot of make it look like Lurpak, and therefore you see a lot of copycats, but they don't have any underlying strategy that justifies it. And then it becomes a trick. It's more often than not, it's one-offs that brands then move on to create. And it's something we get a lot. But that is fundamentally silly to look at another brand and say, I want that. If done right, a brand is unique. Has a unique DNA, and that's what you should be looking at to unfold the story and choose the way how to unfold the story that usually the creative agency has come up with.
I mean, there's something, you wrote this article and the first thing that you say there is, once you strip a product from the package, they all look the same. So every milk commercial looks the same, every yogurt commercial looks the same. And especially if you're following, you know, cool shots and trends,
right?
Then every brand just is like a copy of a copy of a copy. Talk a little bit about how you realized that. What moment did you realize that? And what did that make you think about?
Well, no, you're super right. There's very strong trends in our industry. We all look at each other's work and we hop on the bandwagon. This is a marketing challenge, not per se a tabletop challenge. But the minute I found myself shooting the same beer swirl for 5 different beer brands, I thought there's something wrong here. Basically, if you're putting that on air, you're promoting the category rather than the brand. Wouldn't it be nice to find a way to make that beer swirl into your specific beer swirl? And then, you know, if you say those things, there's other voices in the industry that say, well, but this just works best. And there's no more things to be discovered in beer or in chocolate images or whatever. That is simply not true. It's the same as looking at humans. Humans are never boring. Humans always inspire you. You know, interaction of humans with food, interaction of humans with brands, they never cease to inspire. So that's simply a short-sighted assumption. It's also not a scientific fact. You know, there's not much new you can do. The human creativity doesn't have ends.
Yeah, there's a really cool image that you put, and I'm going to link the article, you know, in the description, where you put this image of like all these chocolate brands and like that typical shot where like the logo made out of chocolate kind of comes out of the chocolate, or like the chocolate.
Yeah, out of the liquid chocolate.
Itself, yeah. Comes out of the liquid chocolate, and they all look exactly the same. So if you blink,
yeah,
and you didn't read the logo or you didn't read the name of the brand, you don't even know what kind of chocolate it is.
Yeah. I do understand why it's attractive. It's a very attractive image. So I'm not saying brands should not use it. I'm just saying that fight your way out of that sea of sameness will prevent you from looking like your competitor. You must know this. We get a lot of briefings that are basically a collection of screen grabs of other brands and a voiceover, a relatively generic voiceover written to those borrowed images. We notice that creative agencies often are not super interested in the product stuff, the mid-funnel stuff. They're mostly interested in the big brand stuff. And I understand that. But it results in a place where we get a lot of sameness. And we as a community of image makers should also help brands steer away from that. Because if we keep on saying, yeah, I can do that, well, you know, it would be interesting to know a little bit more about how brands work and insert brand thinking into our processes. Because our processes are usually just about technicalities, about execution, about aesthetics, which is the core of our business. Sure.
Of course. And it's what you say. I mean, at some point, somebody developed a rig to do this awesome beer swirl and it looks amazing. But the same creative energy to creating that swirl, you could create other stuff. The problem a lot of times is, you know, there's no money, there's no time, everything has to be quick. The client always wants, hey, do you have a reference for this? And obviously innovation doesn't have a reference.
But we're better than that. We can make a reference. We can Photoshop, we can AI, we can upside down a reference if that's the problem. And I think also we should find references and find inspiration outside our own industry. We often see directors coming up with references of other directors that have shot very similar stuff. Now that is, you know, go to a museum, go to a store, read a book, go cooking. I don't know, but don't look at each other's work for inspiration. Then you get into this place where you walk into sameness.
Sometimes it's as simple as like going out to the supermarket, buying the product, putting it on your table, taking out your phone and looking at it from different angles.
Totally. Totally. And I imagine a lot of us do that. So that's great. But it's not only shots that are built with rigs and then you reuse the rig. That's not only the problem. I think I found myself shooting McDonald's one day and shooting KFC the next day with a very similar product. And then I suddenly found myself being the the big decision taker on who gets which lighting and which lens I use for which brand. There were no talks about those decisions. And directors and DPs know that they're relatively big choices because your image will look and feel very different if you angle it or lens it or light it in a different way. Those choices, we cannot expect marketers or agencies to understand those choices because it's very technical. But it is a responsibility of us to explain what the effect of little choices that we make have on the character of the image. And in that sense, we can put those instruments to use to create a distinctive image for different brands.
Yeah.
But if we want to do that, we have to be informed about the brand and its DNA and its basically purpose in life.
And it's sometimes as simple as I remember when I shot Burger King a couple of years ago, they completely wanted to change their visual identity in a way. They said one of the most important things is not shooting the burger, you know, from a top angle where you see mostly bread, but like lowering the camera and shooting it from a lower angle and maybe with a wide angle lens. So the burger looks bigger, you know, make the burger into a hero pose. I think that's what you mean. It's sometimes it's nuances like that. The selection of a lens, the selection of a, you know, it's, we're talking about a couple centimeters that the camera goes down and suddenly the burger looks completely different. And just thinking about that, those tiny elements is worth it. Especially when you think about a brand, like, is this brand in your face? You know, is this like the big Burger King blap, or, you know, is it a more elegant, you know, product?
Yeah. You know, like questions like what's the brand archetype or what's the brand positioning? What space does the brand want to occupy in people's minds? You can learn so much from that and inspire choices based on that. And, you know, Burger King is a great example. JKR, one of the biggest design agencies, did the rebrand of Burger King. They did an amazing job. It's super nice. But they also spent some time in the brand documents, in the brand book, about how the food looks. Not too much, but at least there's some attention. There's all the other big brands do not have one page on how their food should look in order for it to represent their brand. Now, and that's exactly the challenge we solve by developing culinary identities for food brands. Because we feel that this is it's underexposed. The importance of how the food looks really is now often left over to makers such as you and me that decide often based on gut feeling or an inspiration of the moment. Now, if we want to serve the brand and not ourselves, we will look at the DNA of the brand and translate that into visual and culinary equivalents. If we want to serve ourselves and our own showreels, we're going to set out to make something spectacular that serves us, you know, and that's just not right. And I'm not saying everyone's doing that, but I think that the thinking about how can we translate the brand values into food depiction, that is something that brands should do more to achieve more consistency and become more remarkable and memorable.
My question is, and obviously you already said that it's something that lies more on the agency and the creative side. So how do you approach this? How do you address this issue? How do you ask for permission to develop something like that?
Yeah, well, I think the first step is that once we had this unlock, this insight, like, oh, this is what we could do. We started basically like missionaries going through food marketing land and tell everyone that this is an issue that we can solve. Now that we have a rigid system underneath the designing of culinary identities. So that's taken a lot of time convincing brands that this is a challenge. Well, the minute I pull up the visual of the chocolate examples that you just mentioned, brands go, I get it. And my category probably has the same. It usually does. So the problem can be evident quite quickly. And then we move on to say, when you're advertising, when you're putting your brand or your product out there, they have to know it's you. Otherwise, it's a theoretical exercise. You're promoting the category. Right? So making the problem clear is simple once I'm in those meetings. getting into those meetings can be challenging. Now, if we move on to developing an actual identity, we simply move on to getting in all the information. It's a process that follows the structure of a design process because it is the sibling of a visual identity or a sonic identity. Now, people who develop sonic identities or visual identities, the design agencies, they follow a certain structure, which means they analyze the brand, the competition, the consumer, the product, et cetera, et cetera. Then you strategize. You think about how, along which lines can I help solve this problem? Are there societal moves or trends in society or feelings in society that we can latch on to? And then we go into tactical executions, image making, creative work. So those are the steps to develop an identity.
Do you have like a specific product where you went through all those steps?
Well, we've become rather successful at developing culinary identities. I think we've done like some 20 identities now for food brands. And that's clearly a job that requires time. We've hired staff for that. We have now strategists, creative teams, account managers in our company to manage this process. This has become a business model and a job. And in those processes, we involve also our photographers, our directors, our food stylists, et cetera, et cetera, to keep the craft side of the business in the creative and strategic thinking. So along the way, we've gotten major companies such as Unilever, for which we've done 3 brands. We're currently working on their biggest food brand. We've gotten Molson Coors on board, for which we did Miller Genuine Draft. So big companies now know where to find us. And also some smaller local companies. We have been working on 4 Unilever brands now. So they kind of start getting it, that this is important. And this is actually, ultimately, it builds a brand equity. It makes the brand more valuable because there's more visual cues out there in the world that remind buyers of the brand. And that's how you build brand equity. You make it more famous.
One thing you did was for Miller Beer.
Yeah, the Miller case was a super interesting one. We had already worked for the brand. We knew we became very friendly with the brand people. We took them on board on explaining how culinary identity works. Uh-huh. And we had to really convince them. It took me a lot of sessions to convince them, but then they freed up a little bit of budget for first stages. What we did, we looked into the DNA of the brand and the brand positioning said we're here to pioneer fresh socializing. So Miller is consumed in high energy clubs and bars at parties where always music is playing. And many of their ads were already taking place in the space of music and dancing. So we took that and thought, what is in there? What's in that world? And then I remembered if you put sound through liquids, you get these signature waves. You get the sonic energy makes the waves ripple in liquid if you do it just right at the right frequency and the right intensity. That is a personification, if you will, of music and sound. So we came up with what we call a culinary foundation, which is a sentence that represents our central approach to how we depict the food. And that sentence was called Urban Heartbeat. So we saw the kick drum in electronic music as the heartbeat of a city. And the kick drum, if you visualize that in beer, you get those nice ripples and those waves. It's actual acoustic energy is designing the way the beer looks. Right. And the waves in the beer, it probably came from a moment when I put a beer on a speaker because I sometimes am in spaces where speakers and beer happens, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah.
And then you see that happening. There's something exciting there. So we took that. We made many more proposals, but this is the one they really latched on to. They loved that idea. So that was approved. Then we went into research and development. We spent days on days and days with speakers and beer in our lab and cameras and lenses and looked at it from different angles. And then we thought, well, what more can we do? Can we look at it at the liquid from below? And can we get that done inside the bottle? So it's not just a pool of beer, but it's also inside the bottle. And we thought, can we make the bottles dance? You know, when you see the whole bottle, you basically put a big ass speaker underneath and made the bottles also jump to the music. And so so on. The condensation on the outside of the bottle. So now this thinking has been implemented into two global campaigns. Now, if you see a beer bottle dance to the music, you'll know it's Miller time. So that is that's how this be. And we recently got an award for that identity. So
Nice. Congratulations.
You know, I always didn't believe much in the awards thing. But, you know, if you receive one, then it's different.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's like, I don't care about awards. Here's an award. Oh, let me put it in my shower.
Sure. Opportunistic as ever. No, but it's the Miller case is a really beautiful one. And let's be honest, Miller is a mono brand. So it only makes beer. And we all, beer's pretty. You know, it's got the bubbles, it's got the fizz, it's got the foam, it's got the droplets on the bottle, et cetera, et cetera. There's also brands that are relatively boring or ugly.
And Miller, I think it's a great example because, and especially in Germany, you know, like beer commercials in Germany are very elegant. I feel, you know, German attitude towards beer is like, it's their liquid gold, you know, they respect it in a way and they want to visually, no nonsense.
It's full of heritage.
Yes. In South America, the beer approach is completely different. There, they don't even care about the beer. Like they would never do like a slow-mo. It's all about, you know, the interaction, the comedy.
Right.
And if you look at Argentinian beer commercials, yes, they're holding the beer in their hands, but you know, it's not about that. It's about having a good time with your friends.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's interesting. A famous Dutch beer brand came out with an ad after almost 3 years of radio silence. So the whole market was like, whoa, what's going to happen? They have a great agency on board. And they made an ad in which people were doing things, but there was no beer in it. There was not one pixel was yellow in the whole ad. So I think what's also important to remember is that the showing delicious food on screens has a superpower.
Yeah.
It speaks to our reptile brain and it says, come get me now. It's irresistible because our simple brains cannot identify real food from images of food.
Right.
So we have the same response.
And we've been talking about the visuals, but also, you know, like merging those visuals with sound, you know, just having that, you know.
Totally. You remember the crack of the Magnum ice cream?
Mm-hmm.
You know, immediately you go, oh, give me an ice cream. It is the sensory cues, and that's our job, delivering sensory cues. But I think on the long run, our job is, sure, we deliver as tabletop people, we deliver all the sensory cues, we make mouths water, and we speak to the imagination. But on the long run, if we want to be successful at what we do, delivering sensory cues is a condition. Of course we have to do that. But they have to know it's you. So who we serve is the brands. Those are the people that are paying for what we do. So that thinking can be a little bit more, needs to take up a little bit more space in our industry.
Where do you see this heading towards? Is there any awareness that you wish that creatives had?
We cannot expect creatives or strategists to know the amount of detail about food images as we do. And vice versa, we are not creatives. I do feel that there's a discrepancy between the importance that or the weight product images get from clients and from agencies. I come from a live action background, and if I shoot an ad and the product comes to the table, the brand manager jumps up and say, oh, this is my moment. My product is now on the table. And the creatives tend to go out and smoke cigarettes because they don't care about the pack shot, which is understandable. But I think that's just a bit of finger pointing. I think we should flip it. I think we should involve ourselves more in how brands work because we get a lot of people that say, well, trust me, I know how to make this shot because I've made it 10 times before. That's bluntly arrogant.
And lazy.
And that's how they assume how brands work. But it comes from a lack of knowledge that, you know, it's about distinction. It's not about the sensory cues. They should be there clearly. The magic of marketing is that we do not really know. It's not a science per se. there are scientists at work in the marketing space, but it is not an exact science. We cannot predict exactly what works and what doesn't to consumers, but we can be of inspiration to creators and to brands. But in order to be a proper consultant in that space, we need to know and up our knowledge. Apart from just being a craftsperson, we also need to know a little bit more about how brands work and not just say, trust me, I'm a doctor, I know how to manage this chocolate, because that's not how brands work. That's how chocolate works.
You know, I think the pack shot is a great example because it's always, oh, it's a product on the table and that's it. And I think a pack shot can be so much more than that. And going back to, you know, where our conversation started with Lurpak, I think they showed people that you have permission to mess around with a product and have really that human interaction with a product that doesn't have to be pristine. You know, if you're making a commercial about beer dancing, then the pack shot should have the beer still dancing.
Yeah.
And not then suddenly be, oh, there's a bottle of Miller, you know, on a table and that's it.
So there's even a cleaner example. When we came on board on Miller is all about fresh socializing. And the pack shot, the end shot, or the opening shot of the film would be one beer. Now, if you're about socializing, why would you show one beer?
Exactly.
It's that simple. And you know, visualizing values of the brand in the depiction of food, agencies and brands need to take the time to brief us properly on what they're after, because we can bring more than just the viscosity and the droplets and the lighting. And on the other hand, we shoot up our game and know more about how brands work in order to serve them right.
That's it for this episode of The Yummy Factor. If you like the show, please subscribe so you don't miss an episode. If you have questions, you can find the contact information in the description box. The Yummy Factor airs every second Wednesday of the month.